Welcome to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast, where top football coaches from around the country share their stories, philosophies, concepts, and strategies to help you get better on and off the field. Now, here's your host, Keith Grabowski.
Welcome to week 5 of the Smart Coaching Series on USA Football's Coaching Coordinator Podcast. Today's topic is coach stress. It's something we don't talk a lot about over the course of the season. We get focused on other things. We get focused on our athletes. We're focused on our X's and O's. But over the course of a season, that stress can really build up on a coach for a number of different reasons. So we're going to talk about some strategies here today to deal with that. And joining me on the podcast are our guest hosts, Dr. Brian Garrity and Dr. Clayton Kuklick. Guys, it's great to be here again with you in week 5.
Yes, looking forward to it, Keith.
Thanks for having us back, Keith. Glad to be here and talking about a very important issue. I think, again, coach stress and how to manage that and change the organization to facilitate the health and well-being of everybody involved.
Guys, I think back to just a few years ago, coaching at the college level, and it'd be a day like today, a Tuesday as we're recording this, and we're holed up in that office all day long. We're doing everything we can to break down the opponent's film, figure out what our game plan is, get our practice scripted, get those cards drawn, and we're flying through the day, not really enjoying it. And for me, the best part was to finish that up and just to get out to the practice field maybe 30 minutes before anybody else is getting out there and relax and enjoy a nice fall day and kind of de-stress for a little bit before we hit the practice. Practice was always fun. To me, that was the place I felt most comfortable and stress-free. But everything around that really would build up the stress, just all the things you needed to do over the course of the day. Obviously, you get into things depending how the season is going. There's some of those pressures to deal with the winning. As you get late in the season and maybe if things aren't going well, you start thinking about, am I going to have a job? So coaches do have a lot of stress. They have to deal with it. And certainly there's some healthy ways to do that as well as some unhealthy ways. And I'll leave it up to you guys. First of all, let's get into that topic. And, you know, for coaches, what are the things that really are stressors? What causes so much stress in this profession?
I think you touched on a lot of them right there, you know, and that kind of telling your own story. So most of the coaches will talk about pressure to win. And unfortunately, we might have used to think that was just a professional or high collegiate level, but really that's kind of trickled its way down to everybody. You've got at least that perception of stress too, and the pressure to win. The youth coaches in the high school setting, they're worried about keeping their job as well. Then even the summer leagues and the camps and those folks too, they go out there and they might not even feel pressure to win, but pressure more than to develop talent and then to have their guys showcased so that they get scholarships or they can and keep their business maybe going or the summer leagues going. So usually the pressure to win, job security, those are the kind of top work-related stressors.
I would just add, I mean, I have some similar experiences as you, Keith, but by the time you get out to the field, that's like the really exciting time, but you have so many other things that are going on before that. There's athletes getting to class, managing different issues. But the key thing for me, I think, is why this is an important topic that perhaps coaches may not recognize or realize, and I certainly didn't realize it until you look at some of the literature on how coaches are impacted by stress in regards to their performance as well. So if you think about all the decisions coaches need to make during games, during practices, their observations that they're making of technical skills, of tactics produced by the other team or just in practice, their decisions they make regarding what to do with a particular athlete in regards to maybe a pedagogical strategy. Those are all performance decisions that coaches need to make. But we also see in the literature that the more stressed coaches are, the more impaired they are in regards to making those decisions. So we can think of it in such a way that stress impacts the decisions that coaches are making and can also have implications on outcomes in regards to winning and losing and also regards to individual athlete performance as well.
When I look at the stress building up over time, I'm sure I've had it at some point in my career. I know I was talking to a friend recently. Season's not going so well. They've started out 0-3 on the season, and he's been at some really big places. He's coached and done really well, but this particular job it's a lot more on his plate. He says, man, I think I'm burned out. I think I'm looking to retire from coaching. And this is in week three. He's telling me that kind of stuff. I guess when you look at all those things building up over time, I think some of it is maybe you don't have the strategies to deal with all those things, that it starts to accumulate. So with that in mind, what would you say are some strategies to help every single coach in dealing with stress so that you don't get to the point where you're saying, man, maybe it's time to hang this up?
That's a great point. And actually, too, one of the things I think now's a great time to point out in the academic literature, burnout is an interesting concept. You know, we think about, just like you described it, that this coach is over it, that he's reached his end, probably got some physiological and psychological fatigue. And you got to go, do we strengthen his resilience and coping skills, or do we also change the environment, or really both? So we got to be mindful that what's causing that? Is it an individual weakness, or is it that after right so many years and so many pressures and too many responsibilities and maybe things that aren't really filling, that environment perhaps need to be changed? Tuesday, coach is watching film. Do you really need to watch film for 8 hours straight at least? Can there be a way to break that up or to integrate a little bit of fun or enjoyment or some humor and self-talk involved with that, so it's not just a grind? I personally only coached football a couple of years, and I didn't script plays. I wasn't calling plays, but I hated watching film personally. Didn't enjoy it hardly at all, and I don't enjoy thinking about plays and scripting that stuff very much either. So what can you do with that? And, you know, one is, again, maybe then I'm not cut out for it. I'm not meant to be that guy, so I don't go into that role. The coach that you're looking at, can the head coach or can this coach then change the environment so he doesn't want to or feel like he's burned out? Then for this coach, I'll pause for a second, but then I'll shift to like more individual level responses and maybe strategies for this particular coach too, to think about it.
Yeah, the only thing I would add would be just different strategies. So I think it was critical that you mentioned talking about like rechanging the environment, and that's kind of one strategy in itself, but then also the individual strategies, which we'll piggyback on. So I guess I would drill down on what changing that environment is, and that's maybe taking some breaks, also engaging in a healthy lifestyle as well. I mean, you know, the physiological and the mental components are also taxing, but we also know that regular exercise is a stress reducer. So maybe you can change the environment by maybe getting some exercise in while you're maybe watching film, if you have to be put in a situation where you're watching a lot of it. Breaking up the routine, how else would you change the environment? What else are you thinking there?
Well, I mean, with this guy, I think he's got to have a talk then. You know, and one of the things I wrote down here was too many or ambiguous expectations. You don't know what you're supposed to be doing, or you've got too many things to do. You got to go to the head coach or the decision maker there and have an honest conversation about it and say, hey, look, this is where I'm at. I'm not quite sure what I'm supposed to be doing. I've got too much on my plate right now. Is there anything we can do? And I would hope then the environment, the head coach, would start to kind of troubleshoot that as well. I think, you know what, if I want this guy on my staff and I want to support him, what do I need to do, right? Yes, that could lead to different problems and other people, and now you've got expectations for different people maybe. But that's part of the nature of leading and managing an organization, is that you've got people that are different at different points in their lives, and you try to support everybody rather than perhaps run everybody out or just run them into the ground until they get burned out. So I think this guy's got to have a talk about that.
Well, I think that brings up an interesting point, Brian, that number one, I think it takes a lot of courage to be in that situation where you would step up and go to the AD and say, hey, we need to look at this, and maybe we need to manage some expectations or maybe take some of my workload away. There's a number of different reasons that it can happen. But I think in general, head coaches especially are going to trend more towards keeping those thoughts inside, letting those build up, letting the maybe that turn into anxiety or something else manifest in different ways when you just keep holding that in. And I think, thinking back to my head coaching days, even when you have that group of guys you're tight with, they don't necessarily understand all the things that you go through as a head coach. So I think having a network of head coaches, probably one of the best things that happened to me, is I coached in our state's all-star game, and I met a few guys there who we sat down and talked and were honest with each other rather than always being competitive. Like, we were in a lot of the same situations and had a lot of the same things we were dealing with. And having that network, that group of guys to bounce ideas off, really helped me in that regard as well.
You know, I'm glad you brought that up, because one you know, one of the things that is important to kind of reducing stress or mental health issues and stigma is normalizing it a bit. And that's actually what we talk about a lot with our college, is trying to normalize the conversation and be open about that. And it happens at times in coaching, you know, more like what you just described, rather than the formal coach meeting, all staff meeting. Guys get together and they can really kind of say like, hey, do you guys ever get stressed out about these things? Or what do you guys do about this stuff? And the head coach too, you're on more of an island because there's fewer guys that have had that position and they really kind of will understand and empathize with that experience. But then it made me think too, in preparing for today, Clayton and I did a research study a couple of years ago about his coaching experience. I'll let him speak to it right now. It'd be great.
Yeah, basically it was very similar. It was a little bit formalized, but it was basically a learning community where we just kind of met each week and talked about different problems that I was facing during that week of coaching. And one of the key findings from after doing, you know, regular, consistent one, they were probably about 40, 30 minute just chats, meetings, talking about different problems they were facing, that one of the outcomes was not only was they more efficient in solving practical coaching problems, but also an extreme decrease in stress. All of those things, the stressors that we were talking about were building, but as a way of just talking throughout some of the problems that were causing this stress was a great reducer in actual stress. And it actually enhanced my performance as a coach because I felt a little bit more free. I wasn't so bottled up, the anxiety and the nervousness and the stress, that I was making better coaching decisions, better observations. But it's great that you brought up that networking piece. So, I mean, that's another way of changing in the environment, being a little bit more vulnerable and going to talk with maybe another coach that's not in your immediate competitive environment, someone else from another area in the country, perhaps, or ex-coach, perhaps, that you might have worked with previously that may not be current situation, that you can kind of vent to and talk about practical coaching problems to reduce that stress.
I know when I look at just taking a smaller look at it and managing just the kind of the weekly stress, I know it was always good to, you know, do some things that made it a little bit fun. I could always think like Thursdays for us in season when I was at the college level at BW, we kind of had this routine and it would be beginning of the season, I would pick maybe a few guys and none of them were quarterbacks. I coached the QBs. We would actually run this drill at the beginning of practice, but we put the cans in the corner of the end zone and start on the 5-yard line and it would be usually another coach and a couple players and we'd limit it, I think, to 4 or 5 guys and we would just go and throw fades at the can, trying to put the ball in the can and moving, you put it in, you move down the field. And I have to note that except for one season, I did win it every season. So you got a point each week that you won. But that kind of made it fun for us. That was something that Thursdays before practice, really Wednesday, the whole game plan's in practice, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursdays kind of shells and to tie things up and less on the individual, more on going over the last minute things with the game plan. But one of those things that just kind of took the stress out of the week. We always show up there and guys would be early to practice and it just became a routine for us to make it fun. And I would say the other thing I did, it wasn't every week, but it was usually I would get the equipment staff involved with this one is usually we were playing a prank on somebody. So it might be our lockers weren't built in when they were in the stadium. We ended up moving to a different building, football building later, but put one of the coaches, I think it was the defensive line coach, if I remember right, put his locker up on the hill, took it out of the locker room. Or I like to mess around with the head coach as well. And he had these small little feet and we had like some former Cleveland Browns cleats in our locker room. I always go in his locker and put his shoes inside the cleats and kind of look like clown shoes. But just different little things like that where we could play some pranks and have some fun and joke around, I think took away the stress, the pressure, maybe a little bit of that game week. And we would always find a way to have a little bit of fun that way.
I think that's a good example, again, changing the environment that we were talking about before, you know, just switching it up. And you guys had in a routine in it, but you made a point to embed something fun in this particular week to disrupt that stress and constant focus on the next win or whatever, the next team. So
yeah, a lot of things came up. You reminded me too, unfortunately, Keith, that BW quarterback ended my college career.
Oh no.
When I dislocated my shoulder. Yeah. So that I'm going to have to work through that trauma again. I think it's interesting too, like when you're talking about jokes and humor and that, you know, you also see nowadays a lot of coaches getting on the bandwagon with dance and song, you know, music.
Mm-hmm.
So before practice or before, you know, or after practice, you know, there's some type of music going on or the coaches are dancing. It's funny too, seeing some of these really, you know, old coaches that can't dance and mostly listening to hip hop, they're all putting out competition videos versus each other. It's pretty funny too. And one of the good skits too, and humor is actually one of those individual level coping mechanisms too, that's identified in the literature quite frequently. People tell jokes to have a good time and break up some of the stress. My dad likes to kid that the Irish are funny because otherwise they wouldn't be able to tolerate, you know, humanity. I coached with, at Tennessee, I coached with Dan Brooks, who was a D-line coach after Tennessee at Clemson when they won national championship a couple of years ago too. And there was a good skit that Clemson, this is more drama. This is really theater in a way, that they produced a short clip of Coach Brooks in his office. You know, a couple of the players were walking by. And Coach Brooks is in the office on the clip listening to some hip-hop music, which I can guarantee you Coach Brooks did not do. And he's an old, you know, military guy. He used to work out, you know, consistently, daily, you know, before 5:30, one of the first guys in the gym every day. He's certainly not just listening, hanging out in his office listening to music, especially hip-hop. And the guys just kind of stop, and they look at him, they look back, you know, and that's that, and they move on. And it's just, you know, it's got great irony for guys that have been around it. But you think about those college teams and high school teams that are producing that stuff. I think that's another great way to manage some of the stress and not take yourself so seriously. It is a game, and it's also not a game.
Well, it was interesting. You mentioned that they're typically older coaches. So do you think that has anything to do with,
Absolutely.
At some point they've gotten to the point where they recognize that,
Yeah,
winning's important, but it's not everything, and this is a way for me to kind of open up, show my real self, rather than being this hyper-masculine type coach where there's a certain perception like, okay, when we get stressed as a coach, younger level, we may continue to keep working hard, right? That's the kind of thing. Yeah, keep working. We got to keep working, and that's going to equal these wins and solve this stress, what's causing this stressor, and there's negative implications of doing that, and one of them's burnout, stress, poor coaching performance.
So some of the literature too would look at, when you start to piece together some of the individual case studies on coaches, 25 page papers on individual coaches, and you look at the literature on novice and expert coaches as well. Novice coaches early in their careers often worry more about behavior management and player control and giving off an impression that they know everything, that they're totally in control of everything. Their behaviors follow suit in terms of the hyper-masculinity kind of behaviors, that they're yelling all the time, they're shouting, they're trying to be tough. They have to establish dominance over the entire team. And especially if they're a young, relatively young coach, you know, then they might feel threatened. There might be a small age gap between them and the players. And so those types of things, pressure and the stress that they perceive, you know, increases those behaviors. And next thing you know, their performance drops too, because they're not even focused on the techniques, the tactics, the physical, mental development.
Or just the athlete in general, the holistic development.
Yeah. Yeah. You're so locked in into kind of putting forth this, in a way, a facade that you've got to be this way and everything has got to be so tightly controlled, rather than, hey, you know, take a deep breath. Let's refocus on what's really important, mm-hmm. you know, and develop the game plan there, than, you know, trying to fake your way through or be something that you're not, or just using this stuff, these behaviors too, that are just inevitably going to lead to problems.
Guys, some great stories and examples right there. Let's get into some of the strategies and specifics that we can look to use to manage coach stress and make that something that's applicable.
Yeah, so I mean, just to kind of recap, we talked about like kind of changing the environment and what that kind of would look like. And we talked about also networking and chatting with other coaches as another strategy. More specifically, it might be positive self-talk or something related to reframing emotional-based problems that you perceive. So things that you are perceiving as a problem, see if you can reframe them to engage some sort of other emotional response. So for example, if I'm perceiving a problem that I'm recognizing is causing me stress, how can we reframe that problem to be a little bit more positive, perhaps? Maybe it's something we can reframe the problem as such that this is a great challenge that I'm going to try to accomplish.
Yeah, just like they would talk to an athlete, you know, they would reframe it, you know, hey, this is a great opportunity for you to work and show what you can do. let's work on that emotional control and balance of, okay, when you notice that your heart rate is increasing, that you start to sweat, or that you start to feel overwhelmed or the sense of burnout, what can we go back to think about that this is an opportunity again for me to endure and manage that expectation?
Rather than like, I have to do this, so we have to win this
right.
game, or
yeah.
we have to have this outcome.
Yeah, you'll start to go back to that sense of autonomy and efficacy that I've done this before, I've been in stressful situations, I have control of certain things, and that's what I'm going to focus on. Eventually, I'm going to talk to the coach or something like that. You can restate your values is another thing. This is why I'm here, and this is what it's all about, and help to kind of squeeze the sponge, so to speak, on some of those things that are interfering with your performance or distracting you from right now. And I can put off and develop a goal sheet or a timeline of, you know, this is what I'm going to do weekly or daily to handle these things, and break the large tasks down into smaller tasks, and then put off some things for later that I've got to get sorted out in the off season or when I've got more time.
Yeah, I would just throw in one other topic that comes up in the literature as a strategy would be this avoid and reappraisal. Brian was talking a little bit about, I don't know if you talked about earlier in this podcast or something, but if you want to drill down on that, I think that would be also another useful strategy as well.
Yeah, the avoid stuff is interesting. I mean, some people, and this is really important, that how people make meaning out of things again, and that's why it always sounds kind of ambiguous, because the same experience doesn't have the same meaning for everybody. Right. For me, way to manage stress would be to work out. I have no problem going to the gym, working out. You know, I was there again this morning before 6. But other guys, for them, exercise or physical activity is too much of it, too, especially if they're hurt or injured, you know, creates more problems and can hurt them. So they don't want to do those type of things. And the lawnmower just came by our office. Right. And so it sounds like a lawnmower. It sounds very loud and it's annoying. And I got very frustrated with it because it's annoying and you're doing the podcast, you're on the phone trying to record it. And so one of the ways that you deal with it, and I said a not so nice word, and I knew we were going to cut it out. But, you know, at times that emotional response, and you look at like competitors too, like athletes, right? Serena Williams last week was very upset and said some not so nice things. There's a time and a place to release and have that emotional release. Obviously, as a coach, if you say these things at a press conference or in front of a bunch of parents or the team, that can have really some negative consequences. You don't want to do that. But if you want to go in the back room and not hurt yourself or hurt other people, but you want to release some stress and emotion, just like boxing or other physical activities, for some people it's going to be more yoga and things that are going to be less destructive, so to speak. That's a great emotional way to deal with some of that stuff. And afterwards, you can feel better. You're going to be emotional. The notion, too, that coaches have to be stoic and control their emotions all the time. Yeah, there's some coaches that works and they get that's a good strategy for them, but other guys, that's not the game plan.
So I think the key thing was you also said, like, at times there's times to avoid, and there's other times it's time to, like, just reframe it, reappraise, evaluate what outcome or what behavior I can and should be using to kind of manage the stress. But avoid could be one where you just kind of just let this sit for a while and let me think about it and go do something else before I come out with some behavior that may or may not be, you know, may have some negative implications. And it's not good for stress either. Probably compound the stress by acting out at that particular time.
And I hope, Keith, that coaches, as they're thinking about this and thinking about what bothers them or what bothers their spouse and partners and kids or loved ones, and you start to realize that I'm not the same as everybody else. And then they can do that, like we talked about last week, they can develop greater understanding and empathy towards the athletes. You know, the athletes have different sources of stress.
Mm-hmm.
And the coach then might try to change the practice plan, the schedule. Simply, one of the things we used to do back in Tennessee, too, was to have, you know, popsicles and watermelon sometimes after games, or smoothies, you know, after practice. And that was another just way to break it up and have some enjoyable things that folks like. And you go back to your childhood when you used to play around more, and how do I integrate those things more regularly? And that's going to strengthen the environment, the coping skills, thinking about an athlete and a coach. Sometimes taking a day off is reasonable. It's very hard for coaches, and I know I certainly hated doing that too. I don't think I missed one workout in 8 years, coached at Tennessee, and I hated it, but I had my wisdom teeth pulled in my late 20s, and I was just out of my mind. I just couldn't hardly stand or do anything, and I had to go back in to see the doctor. Developing that sense of empathy can help you ask questions and then develop a context-specific strategy then to solve and address the problem better than just pretending that it doesn't exist or that everybody's the same and I'll treat everybody exactly the same. That's not equal, but it's not equitable or fair to human behavior and success.
I think the one other thing I'd like to add to this, and we talked about, you know, at the beginning when I was mentioning like all the things we had to do over the course of the day and make sure we got those done. I think this is a great opportunity to make sure that you're using the most efficient tools to get things done. And, you know, at the college level, it's easy to use the tool of the GA, but at the high school level, small college level, we might not have those things. And technology provides, I think, some great solutions to helping with some of these issues we talked about, whether it's you look at Navy, for example. Navy will not meet on a Sunday. Coach Niumatalolo makes sure those guys are not in. He doesn't allow anybody in the office. That doesn't mean that they don't work, but they're just working in a different setting. They're at home getting their work done. I know a lot of guys have gone to kind of using Zoom is a popular one right now to just get on with each other for a little bit, collaborate, and then go back to what you're doing, you know, the rest of the day with your family, whatever it might be, to get away from it a little bit. Because I know a lot of guys will grind through, you know, their 7 days a week. And I've had it before where, you know, we might get one day off on our bye week the whole season, and we're going essentially from mid-August all the way into to mid-November without a day off. And that becomes stressing as well. The other thing, just to look at some of those common tasks that you do over and over, you know, you mentioned you hated scripting and doing all those kinds of things, watching film. Well, I know for me, I put together essentially a game planning system where when I put the game plan into my Excel spreadsheet at the beginning of the week, and had all my cells filled out the right way, it scripted the whole week. And I didn't have to go through, and I was pretty detailed on what I wanted to run and where. So I set that template up, so once I put my plays in, it scripted my whole week, and I didn't have to think about it. I knew it was done. I knew it was done in the way I wanted to, and I didn't have to put that probably another 8 hours of work, a full day probably, at least for a civilian, that's a full day, into the course of the week. So I think it's also using the tools that are available to us to help relieve some of those things that we have to do over and over again can be helpful.
Absolutely. And keeping in mind what happens a lot of times though, right? The computer was supposed to save us all from all working hard, and it didn't do that, because the overall logic too is that, well, now that I've got this other thing doing the automation, I can spend my time then doing something else. Going home on Sunday and calling that a day and saying, hey guys, we're just not going to do this anymore. Programs that do that, or they take holidays especially off, or leading up to the season, a lot of teams take off too. But I'm trying to kind of, I guess what I'm saying is keeping in mind that we don't want to be using technology to make things more efficient and then only spend our time again to come up with other
more
things
work.
That we're going to,
right.
We have more work. We're just going to make stuff up to do. You know, you're in strength condition, we call it office guarding, staying around the office because everybody else is there and you've got to look busy. And well, I'll just figure out something else to do. And, you know, you're just like, stop, just stop. It's not useful. And it's not a way to live a life, really. And I mean, some people can, and that's fine. And there's coaches that do that, you know, but that's their values. But, you know, if you're one of the guys that are thinking of work-life balance, you know, that doesn't jive. And then also, I love talking about, I had a great presentation a couple of years ago by Professor William Taylor over in the UK. He was talking about coach nostalgia. And coaches are notorious for this too. Like they would say, well, I'm just working just as hard as they did hundreds of years ago on the farm. And no, you're not. They didn't work that hard back then. The farm, they couldn't work outside during the middle of the heat. You know, they'd all be dehydrated and die. You know, they'd get diseases. You know, it doesn't work like that. You literally can't do that. That's like saying I'm going to be a roofer all day, every day. The hardest working people are not doing that stuff. And even if you could, is that the life that you really want to live like they did 300 years ago, 400 years ago, where the average life expectancy was 30? Make your choices. So let's not romanticize things, though, either.
No, it reminds me of a funny story, and I can't remember the assistant, but he was on Woody Hayes' staff. And what he would do, he was a guy who, you know, would like to get out of the office, get to the golf course. Everybody was, like you said, guarding their desk, guarding the office. And so in order to make sure he didn't get caught leaving early, he would walk down the hall backwards. And if Woody were to pop out the door, you know, he would just put it in reverse and pretend he was, you know, walking into his
No
office.
way. Oh my God.
I heard that at like a coaching clinic somewhere, and you know, it would have been
Yeah.
like the Ohio High School coaches clinic, but you know, I think it points out we do that too much. We guard the desk. Like there's that thought
Yeah.
that we're, you know, I'm going to outwork somebody. Well, we equate that to hours and unintelligent in that manner and slept in my office before and think you're doing right. Looking back on it now, I mean, it's just really silly to think that that's going to make a difference in a game.
I know a guy too. He would leave the lights on in his office all the time, so you would never really know if he was there or not.
We got some great stories there, some great applications on how to deal with coach stress. We're going to continue our conversations next week. We're going to talk about managing the mid-season slump. That doesn't necessarily mean that you have to be a team that is doing poorly. You could be a team that's doing well and still be slumping in some areas. So we're going to address that whole issue next week. But I appreciate you guys spending the time and sharing some great ideas here today.
Thanks again for having us, Keith. And we hope coaches, you know, take it easy and figure out how to manage their stress and go see the doctor, get a well check, and take care of themselves and everybody around them.
Yep. Thanks, Keith. It was good chatting about coach stress. Be sure to hit us up on Twitter, Dr. Cook 14.
Yeah, Dr. Garrity. There you go, on Twitter.
All right, guys, we'll be back at it next week.
Thanks for listening to USA Football's Coach and Coordinator Podcast. For more resources, visit the Coach Performance Center at usafootball.com.